Mr. Snowball, Reel 3. We were talking about the organisation of the company headquarters at Gatherley Castle. What duties did the various people there have in the headquarters?
Well, you had the cooks and everybody else that's normally in a company headquarters, drivers, plenty of transport and things like this, because you had to see it to the whole company. And that's where we got the first intake from those that were called up, enlisted. And I used to take them out every morning before breakfast and give them physical training exercises. They didn't exactly like it, but neither did I, but it had to be done.
And, were these very young men?
Young men, yes, that were called up, yeah.
Do you know whereabouts they were coming from?
All over. Sheffield, one was from Sheffield, there was one from Brantford, there were from all over the place. They were put there. Some of them became sergeants.
And they would come to you at company headquarters?
Yes.
And what happened to them after that? Did they go out to the sites?
They were pushed out to different sites, yes, that's right. Because we were a mobile unit. We didn't just go out with the men on the site and the gun was already there. You had to take the gun with you and set it up, stand it up and everything else. So wherever we went, our guns went.
And how were they transported?
With a lorry in the front, you tore the gun behind, and there was a place on the lorry behind the drivers where the men used to sit.
So there weren't permanent sites, in effect? You were
there weren't permanent sites, no. What happened was you were given an area. Each troop was given an area where the battery was given the area first, and then the troops were given the area after that. And two officers and myself had to take two guns each and take them out. It was already planned where the area we had to go. We had to take them out and find a good place for them where they could have a good all-round view and yet sort of be partially hidden. That's what we had to do. Two officers took two guns each, and I took two guns.
And on arrival at the site, did you, obviously, you put the guns in, the searchlights in.
Yes.
But then, because we're talking about searchlights at this point.
Oh, talking about searchlights, yes, oh well, searchlights. Yeah.
So that, were the searchlights sites permanent?
They were permanent.
We mentioned the guns, we've got to come to the guns.
Right.
Yeah. So the searchlights sites, as I say, were pretty permanent.
They were pretty permanent, yeah.
How did it get on with the local people in the area?
Quite all right. No problems at all that I can recollect with any of them. Because we didn't really bother them that much, you say. We were in fields outside of villages, and you just could go into the village at night time or something like that, or day time, whatever time you could, one at a time, and go into the village. So there was no problems with the people.
Some of the sites, obviously, when they weren't on stand to anything of that nature, some of them got involved with helping the local farmers. Did that happen to you?
No.
I mean, during harvest time?
No, we didn't do anything like that. The only thing we could do there was sometimes we had to sleep in a barn. The troop headquarters was in a barn. And that was better.
Were the conditions pretty primitive in the early days?
Yes. The men were in tents or wherever they could find a place.
And in the autumn and the winter, the weather must have been pretty bad.
It was bad.
And presumably they coped pretty well with that.
You had to.
Again, talking about the early months of the war, when you were on the searchlight batteries. And within the area, you say that the sites were in various places.
That's right,
Were there any canteens available for you?
No, you got your rations brought out from headquarters, Gatherley Castle.
Did the Salvation Army come? Evidently, they appeared.
No.
But you didn't have any?
Didn't visit the sites, no. Nothing like that.
I think we mentioned that in the initial stages, there was no activities, in a sense, that you weren't in action against the...
Not a great lot of activity. Now and again, you were called out, and we were called out more times to put beacons up for Lame aircraft coming back to show them which aerodrome, either Catrick, Laming or Dishforth. You had three searchlights with different bearings, whichever aerodrome it was, and wherever they peaked, the Lame aircraft coming back knew exactly where the aerodrome was. The only thing you had to be careful of course, that there was no German planes around. Otherwise, you were showing them exactly where the aerodrome was. But fortunately, it never happened.
Have any other memories of the searchlight sites which are outstanding in your mind?
I don't think so.
Presumably, gradually over a period of time, the equipment would improve.
Oh, the equipment did improve. I mean, where we used to look for planes and yell instructions, you got these things to hear the sound, and you followed that sound, and they automatically worked the searchlight.
There were improvements coming in.
There were great big trumpets, three, and men on each one, and they used to, with the sound, get to where the aircraft was.
Direction finder.
Oh yes.
Locators.
Yes.
Did you get involved with the local Home Guard? Were they available at that time?
No, we didn't have anything to do with them at all, no.
Did each day or evening start with a stand-to every day?
No, you just, when you were called to do it, you did it.
What kind of timing would you say between... What kind of time would it be between, say, getting the alarm and actually getting the searchlight on?
Oh, just five minutes, because you were actually on the site in tents or whatever, and the searchlight was there. So it was just a case of running out, getting the thing started up, the engine started up, and the searchlight on, and you were away.
And did this mean that you had to sleep with clothing on?
Yes. Yes.
Because obviously you wouldn't have much time to get dressed and get out.
You didn't. No, you hadn't time to get dressed and get out. And if it was winter time, of course, it was you were glad to keep your clothes on.
About leave, how often did you get leave?
Quite regularly at first, because we're just at Catterick, you see, and it wasn't very far. We used to come out onto the main road, which is the A1 now, and any lorry would stop. They were nearly all coming through to Sunderland on Newcastle, and they would give you a lift, no problem. No problems at all.
And those would be just what? Short leaves?
Oh, yes.
Weekends?
The weekends or a day or two, yeah.
What a longer leave, the week or 10-day leave?
Yes, you would get now and again, you would get your week's leave to come home.
Can I take you now to memories of the Dunkirk period? Do you recall that what was happening at that time?
Well, just by the news. I mean, we had nothing to do with that. It was all down south, where we were all right round Catterick Aerodrome, Laming Bar.
It was a great threat, of course, that the Germans might invade. Did you have to have basic infantry training? To fight off Germany.
Oh, we did have basic infantry training, At Holt Whistle, we had battle training, yes.
What form did that take?
Oh, attacking heels. And there was one particular occasion where they had a very steep heel, and they had a paraffin lamp on the top of that heel. And there was half of us had to defend that lamp, and the other half of us had to get up that hill and capture the lamp. And it was difficult because you had more or less crawl all the time. You never knew where anybody was, and one thing or another. As a matter of fact, I got stabbed. But things like that, you know, and you had to do. And your face blackened up, of course, and all that. But
did you include digging trenches or defences as well?
No, we never dug any trenches there, no.
Just attacking and defending?
Just attacking and defending, more or less, yes.
After that, did you feel that if the Germans did arrive, you were sufficiently well trained to repel them?
We were trained, but we weren't equipped. That's the trouble. You say we couldn't do it. When we, as I've said, I think before, when we first went to Weir, we left the searchlights behind at Livingston Road, and all we had was a long pole with a, like the bayonet thing on the end, and that was your defence. But no, we weren't called upon, thankfully.
What weapons did you get when they started to arrive?
Oh, you got Bren guns, Sten guns, you know, automatic weapons like that. And everybody had a rifle, of course, and a bayonet, and ammunition. And that's about it.
You mentioned that each searchlight site, I think, had a Lewis gun to begin with.
Well, Lewis guns first. And
what
then
was the intention of having those on site?
In case you were attacked. Well, I mean, you got your searchlight on. That was a good target for an enemy plane to come and attack you. So you had a Lewis gun stuck on a stand, ready to defend yourselves.
What were they like? Were they a good gun?
They were quite a good gun. You had a round thing full of bullets that went on the stem gun, and provided it didn't stick, you fired away, and then when that was empty, you put another one on. Took that one off, put another one on. So they were quite good, yes. And the stem guns were as well.
And these would have to be cleaned and maintained?
Oh, definitely cleaned, oiled, maintained. The rifles even had to be all cleaned, the barrels out and everything else, and oiled, yes.
And that was part of the daily task?
That was part of the daily task.
I think we mentioned that there were regular inspections.
Oh, they were always coming around, the officers inspecting, yes, always coming around. I mean, sometimes they would have been whitewashed the coal, and the coal buggers, for them coming around. What, not so much your troop officers, but the ones from headquarters.
Was the Lewis gun replaced by the Bren in time?
No, I can remember that the Lewis gun quite late on in the war, really. So we didn't have very much more to do. I went on a small arms course, and I could strip them all down, the stem gun, the rifle, right down to the last nut and bolt, and put them all together again. We used to have little bits of competitions on to see who could do it the fastest. And it was surprising how adept you got.
Were any of the sites or the headquarters ever strafed by German aircraft?
Not up this end, no. Not up here, no.
And do you recall ever seeing a German aircraft? Or?
Oh, yes, we've seen them before. Yes, we've seen them. But there was fighter planes around as well, of course, as well, then.
Now in the January of 1942, you said the role changed. You were moving from searchlights to landing aircraft.
Both, yeah. vote was...
Can you recall being notified that that was going to happen prior to the event itself?
Well, we were just previously, not a long time. We didn't get a long time. We just knew we were going to get changed over to the Beaufort's Light Argonne. Some of us sergeants and that had to go away to be shown how to do these things, and we had drills and things, how to put them up if they were broke down, how to get them put right and things like this. You had one man on the where the ammunition went into the thing. It used to be in blocks of about five, and they just to drop in, and there was another man there was handing them up to him. You had two men on the gun working the things with wheels horizontally and vertically. You had your sergeant, and that was more or less it.
How did it fire? What was the firing mechanism on the gun?
Pom-pom or single shot. You could have either you wanted to. Pom-pom or single
and
shot.
And how did it fire? Was it a trigger device for firing?
Or no, it was a pedal. The man that used to put the ammunition into the holder was the man that fired the gun. He had a foot on the pedal. And he pressed that pedal down and it started a fire. Now he had a piece of rope on his ankle from there, and the sergeant had hold of that rope, so that if when he wanted to stop firing, he just pulled on the rope and pulled his foot off the pedal, because otherwise he probably wouldn't have heard anything with the gun pump, 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 pump all the time.
Was it an accurate weapon?
It depended on the men themselves, yes. We went to Clacton-on-Sea, we went to Stiffkey, and we had these planes with the like airbags, things, type of things on the back, towing them, and that was the target. There's quite a few hits because it only needed a piece of paper to hit the front end of the shell, and it went off.
It was as cute as that.
It was very, very fine. Yeah, it's very fine.
The aiming device for the gun, what was it?
They had the like a round circle with and split up, and it used, as I said, there was two, the one horizontal and one vertical, and they used to get onto the thing and then start the firing. And of course you could see the shells going up as well and move accordingly. But it was all worked by hand with these two men.
Firing it at night, you basically wouldn't see exactly where the shells are going. Did you have a tracer element in the room?
No, you had a pretty good idea where they were going because you had them in. If the searchlight was on the plane, you could see it easy.
And you were taken away, as you said, as a sergeant, amongst others, to learn this drill.
Yep. Well, you want to learn all this drill and then come back and teach all the men exactly how to do it. Then we had different competitions then among the two to see who could do it the quickest, use the time each one, see who could do it the quickest, who could get it down the quickest again and onto the lorry to be pulled along. And they got very, very efficient at doing it.
How was the unit organised? Now you've moved from a searchlight organisation into a gun
system. A gun, yeah.
How was that organised from the regiment down?
Well, your regiment was from regiment to your battery headquarters, and then from battery to troop headquarters. And your troop, you had six guns in the troop.
Six guns in the troop?
Yeah.
For the full troop?
Yeah.
And were they sighted all together, or were they again spread out like...
No, spread out. As I say, there was two officers and myself. We had to take two guns each and put them in where we thought those were the best places for an all-round shoot, but at the same time to be partially hidden.
Does that mean that in effect you didn't have a barrage situation where you would have all six guns close together firing?
No.
An individual gun on an individual target?
No, they were miles away from each other. But in a pretty big area, I mean, different villages, you know, but they were never all together, never all together.
How did you feel moving from a searchlight to guns?
I think it felt more. It was more interesting. You had more to learn, and you had more to do. So it passed the time away much quicker. And it was. You felt as though you were doing something when you were firing with the searchlight. I mean, it was quiet, silent, and you thought, well, you know, you're not doing much here, so it's not. But with the gun, at least you knew you were firing back at the enemy and you were trying to get them down. Yes, it was more interesting.
Do you recall where the unit moved to for its training?
The training?
The whole unit. Buxton.
Beautiful. Dirty, wet, snowy weather. Terrible place, Buxton. Oh, my. However, you got wet, you just had to get dried when you could. I mean, there was no heaters and nothing, and there was nowhere to go to get dried. You just got wet and you got dried as and when you could.
And what was your accommodation?
When we were all the way like that training, it was a big marquee, and we were in there. But as I say, there was no. You just had to go back with your wet clothes on and lie down, and that was it. You left the bone.
So it wasn't a hutted camp or anything?
No. You had to go outside for your ablutions and wash and shave. Many a time I've had a cup of tea and had a leave and drop in for to have a shave. Otherwise, you had to get cold water.
And again, you're back to a kind of a primitive situation. Pretty cold and primitive situation.
Oh, it was cold and primitive at times, yes. I mean, it varied. Sometimes, as I say, you could get in the farmer's barn or somewhere, because you were allowed to go anywhere you pleased. There was no saying, you can't go through that field, you can't go that field. You could go.
Did that not make it a tough relationship, a difficult relationship between yourself and farmers and the people?
We never had any problems. Never had any problems. I think they knew just as well as we did that we were there to defend.
And your role at this time, as you were saying, was to teach
teach the men. Yes, you had these six guns in your troop, and each gun had the crew. And you had to teach them exactly how to do it. Well, you taught them all together at first on one gun, because each man had a particular job to do.
And did they work around the various jobs so a man could do anything on the gun?
Anybody could sort of change over from being the man with his foot on the firing pedal to horizontal, vertical, traverse, yes, it could change over like that, because you never knew if you were going to lose anybody, so yeah, somebody else had to take that place.
Did the whole unit move across, the same officers, NCOs?
Everybody.
So you still had the same commanding officers?
Same commanding officers, yes. Major Story, he was the commanding officer, and Colonel Squance, of course, was retired because he was elderly, and they were the Major Blackburn.
And the organisation was essentially the same as it had been on Searchlights.
More or less the same, yes. You had your battery headquarters, because we weren't a company then, we were a battery. Your battery headquarters and your troop headquarters, and all your sites.
And in fact, a gun site took over from what was a Searchlight site.
From what was a Searchlight site, more or less, they took the gun site, yeah.
At this point, you're now Royal Artillery, aren't you?
Royal Artillery, yeah. Changed over to 388 battery, Royal Artillery. Still had the DLITARA, you know, still had that behind the original thing.
How long did the training spell last?
Approximately about 6 weeks.
And have any memories, particular memories, of that period of time which you were involved in?
Well, not really. Once we got over the training and we got the gun H and the cruise, we were all over the country.
Before we move on, that just struck me. How was the gun maintained and cleaned?
The men.
What was the system of doing that?
The men did that. They had that, do all that. They had to know how to strip it down a bit and clean it up and put it together. And it was... It wasn't easy to do at first, but it got so used to it, doing it day after day after day, that it became second nature.
But would there presumably be some kind of drill that they'd be taught?
Yes.
Cleaning the barrel, it's a long barrel gun, isn't it?
Yes, it's a long barrel gun.
How did they clean the barrel if it got dirty?
With a rod on down the barrel.
Was it a good weapon?
Very good weapon. Very good weapon. Because you could, as I say, you could do it either single shot, which was never very much used, or the pump bomb. And these five shells were put in at the time, and somebody, as soon as that one was put in, by the time they got hold of the other one after this other man, it was ready to go in, because the other five had gone by then.
What size shell did it fire?
It was a 40 millimetre or 1.59 inches. That was the calibre of the shell.
Where was the ammunition kept in relation to the gun itself when it was on site?
In boxes, just off the gun. So the man could easily get hold of them, lift them up to the one that was doing the firing, and it was no problem. There was no dashing backwards and forwards. He'd just more or less turn around and get it.
How many shells would you think would be stacked around a gun at any given time?
Oh, probably about 100. I mean, you could get them any time you wanted them.
You'd soon fire them off, wouldn't you?
Oh, you'd soon fire them off. But of course, by then, if it was only a single plane or something like that, it was gone. So you had plenty of ammunition.
And it would be replaced, presumably?
Oh, yes, it was all replaced, definitely, straight away. Mm-hmm.